1 million years BC, when the earth parted and the mountains fell.
Welcome to the Ray Harryhausen Podcast, the show dedicated to the life, career and films of a special effects titan. Join us as we host in-depth discussions about the work, influences and legacies of this uniquely talented filmmaker. Brought to you by the Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation, we will be delving into Ray's archive to bring a unique insight into his work, including exclusive audio from the man himself. We will be joined by special guests for retrospectives, exclusive announcements and competitions, so this podcast is a must-listen for all fans of the world of Ray Harryhausen, animation and classic filmmaking.
Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the Ray Harryhausen podcast, or if you're watching on YouTube, episode 14 of our vodcast. And this is an interview with a legendary musician, which may take a few of you by surprise. My name is Connor Heaney, and I'm the collections manager for the Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation, and once more joined by John Walsh, Foundation trustee and author. Hello, John.
Hello, Connor, and how thrilling to be doing another episode where a secret famous person is going to chat to you about their Ray Harryhausen fandom. Now, this seems to be a kind of a collection of famous people that you're collecting. You're like the curator for this because you've spoken to many famous people before, but this person happens to be a certain type of musician as well, which is quite fascinating.
Yeah, that's right. So following up on our conversations with Hugh Cornwell from The Stranglers and C.G. Ramone from The Ramones last year, I spoke with Nigel Glockler, who is the drummer for heavy metal legends Saxon. Now, if you ever watch Top of the Pops 2 on BBC 4, which I'm prone to doing, you may notice on some early episodes from the 1980s, you will see Saxon featuring quite often amongst the new wave of British heavy metal bands of that era. Saxon were actually the most popular by a stretch and featured on Top of the Pops quite regularly. So even if you're not into heavy rock or heavy metal music, you may have seen them on your televisions before. And they're a band that have been going now for well over 40 years and have legions of loyal fans. And so I got in touch. I saw in an interview that Nigel Glockler was a huge fan of Ray Harryhausen, and I couldn't resist getting in touch. His agent, Ace Trump, was very kind enough, who's also a fan of Ray's, and who was very enthusiastic to be in touch with us, put us in touch with Nigel. And you're going to hear that interview now with a heavy metal drummer. Nigel, we're talking to you today because, as well as being the drummer for one of the most legendary heavy metal bands of all time, you're also a big fan of Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, yeah. Movies. Yeah. No, I've just been... it's funny, the whole thing kind of started, film-wise, because, I mean, when I was a kid, and I've still got it, actually, it's nothing to do with Ray's stuff, but it was... I've just been fascinated by dinosaurs ever since I was about this height, and I've still got the book that my dad bought me. It was like, I think it was like a Sunday Times kids book or something. And I turned, you know, and it all had all paintings and things of animals. And I opened, turned this page, and there was a T-Rex glaring at me, and I'd never seen one, you know. And that was like, since that was like my favourite picture in the thing. And I'd just look at that endlessly, you know. And of course, that was how, you know, the T-Rexes in those sort of days, they reckon they got them wrong, you know, the tails were down, whereas now they always have them with the tails almost horizontal out the back. But since then, I was just fascinated by dinosaurs. I even did O-level and A-level geology, paleontology, to learn about the fossils and stuff, you know. So that's how it started. But I think the first film of Ray's I saw was The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. With it, what was he called it? A Redosaurus,
that's,
I think,
right,
it,
yeah.
He made it up, didn't he? And that scared the crap out of me when I saw that, if you don't mind me swearing. But, yeah, I mean, I was constantly drawing pictures of it in class at school and everything. So it kind of started from there, you know.
That's fantastic, because that was Ray's first solo movie. That was the first movie he made by himself.
Oh, right.
He'd done
okay.
Mighty Joe Young with Willis O'Brien in 1949, but The Beast from 20,000 is 1954. And I know it had a pretty high rating when it was released in cinemas in the UK.
It's still one of my favourite ones of his films, I guess, because it did scare the crap out of me, you know. And so, it just fascinated me.
So it was the dinosaur film specifically that you were intrigued by to begin with?
Yeah, initially, because I remember, you know, seeing, I think it was the guy that inspired him who did the first Lost World.
That was Willis O'Brien.
Right.
He was also the animator on the original King
Kong. Right, okay.
He was really raised
That's right, And I just remember seeing this battle between this T-Rex and a Triceratops, I think it was. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And it just seemed so unreal. I think because of the stop motion, because they were slightly jerky. But then that made them seem more unreal. I still find them, I know, like nowadays, you know, with CGI and stuff and the Jurassic Parks and stuff, amazing, amazing things. But I still find the stop motion a bit more eerie.
Well, this is the thing, we're spoiled now, but I think people forget that there weren't many dinosaurs that you could see in cinemas.
That's right.
Back in the mid 20th century. And for a while, Ray was the only person that was making this
that was
movie.
It. Yeah. But I mean, all his, I just love them all. You know, they're just, brilliant. And, you know, as we were talking, Talos.
From Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, my God. When that thing started, started creaking and came to life, I was like, whoa, you know.
Well, Jason and the Argonauts is a film, particularly in Britain, that seems to hold a very special place with people. When we go to the States, people have a broad knowledge of all of Ray's films.
Right.
In the UK, Jason and the Argonauts seems to be this lightning rod, possibly because it's on television so often, and it's on every bank holiday and every Christmas. Yeah. So is that the kind of memories you have of Jason?
Yeah, there's that. But I think it's also, you know, in school we used to do a lot of, and I used to read a lot about Greek mythology and all this kind of thing. So we were quite up on this kind of thing. You know, we were reading about, you know, like the Odyssey and all this kind of stuff. You know, or we'd have, you know, towards the end of term, you know, sort of normal teaching went out the window, you know, when we were in junior school, and our teachers would read from these things and we'd just sit there fascinated. So I think suddenly seeing it on TV, you know, maybe they don't do that in America, I don't know, you know.
I think in America, there's a broader range of Ray's movies that are on television. I think Mighty Joe Young is on every Thanksgiving. And
right.
The Sinbad films are on.
Yeah, the Sinbad, great.
Well, I mean, all of the films are very popular here, but it's just in the UK, Jason and the Argonauts has that kind of cultural cachet where everybody goes, I remember seeing that on a wet Monday bank holiday.
Oh, right, okay.
And as you say, in schools and things as well.
I think a film that doesn't get showed that much in the UK, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, seems to be, what was it? It Came from Outer Space.
It Came from Beneath the Sea, was the giant octopus.
Yeah, no, the one where they killed it in the Colosseum.
That's 20 million miles from Earth.
That's right, That one doesn't seem to get showed
as much. It's
occasionally
Channels like Film 4 and Talking Pictures TV here in the UK.
Yeah.
But that was Ray's last black and white film, and it's a masterpiece as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what really sort of pees me off with all these films, why do they have to kill these things at the end all the time, you know?
Well, you're in good company, because Ray's daughter, Vanessa, she grew up with all the creatures, and her favourite was Gwangi from the Valley
of Gwangi. Yeah, great.
And she furious with her dad when she saw that film. She said, why did you have to kill Gwangi at the end?
I know,
Luckily for her, she could go home and see it sitting on the desk.
But it is, it's always like, they've always got to kill this thing. I felt sorry for the elephant that got it, but...
Yeah, elephants always seem to come up.
Yeah, they do, movies, don't they?
Just the right kind of size. But to go back to the dinosaur film, so I read that you had a nickname, the Rex or the T-Rex, and you're...
Actually, it wasn't that long ago, it was probably about 20 years ago, it used to be called the Rex. And something, I just love T-Rexes, I just do. I mean, that's, you know, in the Jurassic films, when, you know, like, what was it, which one is it, where they, it's not the last one, maybe it's the one before, and they say, the kid says, we need more teeth, and so the girl goes and releases the T-Rex, and I'm like, yeah, here comes the cavalry, you know.
You have an affinity for T-Rexes. So 1 million years BC in 1966, that was kind of like the blueprint for movie dinosaurs for such a long time. Is that one that you saw?
Yeah, I think I've seen them all. I really do. I mean, I saw some. I was watching a program. Oh, this is a while back on Ray, and they actually showed his first ever thing he did as an amateur. You know, that stop-start thing. And I thought, wow, that's just brilliant. You know.
Yeah. Well, we hold all of that material in the collection, so we have everything that Ray did in the 1930s as a teenager.
Yeah.
And we also have his diaries from that period too.
Oh, right.
It ties quite nicely with Saxon's current tour, Carpe Diem, Seize the Day, because
right.
Ray's mother told him, you know, life is short, don't waste time.
Yeah,
he got to it. He's
quite right.
Working
yeah.
really hard on his.
You just got to go for it, you know, you've got to go for everything because, yeah, as far as we know, you only get one chance.
Exactly.
You know, as far as we know.
Well, yeah. We'll find out one day, but, you know, don't take risks. And, yeah. But how does it make you feel to know that Ray's models and artworks are being kept together? Because he kept everything. He was a hoarder. So we have all of the artwork and the materials.
Oh, God, I'd love to see all that. My God, I think it's amazing. I mean, we've got... My wife bought... there was like a limited edition poster came out with all of his paintings of all, you know, like paintings of all his creatures all on this one poster. So I've got that pride of place that was hanging up at home, you know. It's brilliant. No, I just love it. But to know they're all there.
Well, you'll find out a little more. We've passed on a couple of our recent publications from the Foundation. And,
right.
As I said, Vanessa Harryhausen's book kind of details 100 objects from the collection.
Brilliant.
Telling
brilliant.
The story of her father's life.
Yeah.
Just one thing I wanted to touch on. Obviously, in a very important part of Ray's films is the music. Music of Bernard Herrmann and Nicholas Rosa. Was that some as a musician, as a percussionist? Was that something that you ever were particularly?
Yeah, I mean, I always listen to movie music. Whatever. I mean, yeah, the music for his films was like, you know, a lot of it was quite menacing, which it had to be. You know, again, as I say, like the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, when that thing came up and the music was like. Rah! You know, I mean, it was just perfect.
And for Talos and the Skeletons and Jason and the Argonauts.
Perfect.
But some very interesting percussion as well, because there weren't many strings on that score, so lots of drum. Obviously, the castanets for the Skeleton.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, then when those things start coming up and, like, moving forward and stuff, no, I mean, it's just perfect. I mean, you couldn't, you know, you wouldn't want to sort of embellish it anymore. You know.
I need to ask, because one of the things I love about Saxon is the broad range of topics that you cover in your lyrics. You talk about life on the road or ancient history.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider writing a song about Ray Harryhausen or King Kong even?
To be quite honest with you, I don't, you know, but not at the moment we haven't, but I mean, who knows in the future?
And do you have plans, just to tell people who are listening, plans for future tours or albums lined up?
Yeah, we're actually in the middle of writing the next album. So I guess I'll be putting the drums on that probably around next February, I think. I think the plan is to, again, tour the UK either the end of 23 or maybe the beginning of 24. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, the touring's like non-stop sort of thing. And I've got another band as well now as well, so I'm in two.
Excellent.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Yeah, it's a band called 6x6, but you have to spell it S-I-X. And it was funny, the whole story started sort of a year ago last April. I was back in, when was it, 87, I was in a band with Steve Howe from Yes. And there was this American songwriter, guitarist came in, Robert Berry, and we kept in touch. I mean, the band GTR fell apart. There was politics going on. I won't go into that. But we kind of kept in touch. And then he started working with, until he passed, he was working with Keith Emerson. And anyway, we kept in touch. And he came to, you know, a show of ours when we played a few years ago in San Jose, where he lives in California. And he sent me an email last year, April, I think it was, saying, I've just formed this band with Ian Crichton from Saga, who actually is one of my favourite ever guitarists, and we've decided you're the guy. That was it, you know. So I flew over there, did the album. The album's been out about 7 weeks now, and it's doing pretty good. So we're planning on doing some shows next year in Europe and the UK. So
people can catch you on the road. And that, just brings me, I've got one last question. It's okay. Just a personal theory I have, but you can tell okay. me if I'm talking nonsense.
Okay.
I get the same feeling from watching Ray's movies as I get from listening to heavy metal music, the sort of classic heavy metal.
Okay.
Where there's a touch of fantasy, a touch of horror, but ultimately yeah. it's quite a positive and quite a creative endeavour. Do
yeah.
you feel like the people that you've met in bands over the years are drawn towards a particular type of movie, or do you feel it's sort of a broad, you know, creative people in general? Will be
actually,
drawn
it's to really it? Funny because I also write music for TV, you know, library music. So I write, and one of the people I write with is still my best friend down in Hove, and both of us are nuts about like Harryhausen and stuff, and then he'll turn me on to stuff that's non-Harryhausen but still got dinos in it and stuff or something. There's one, what was that film, was it called Baby or something, with a like a baby brontosaurus in London or something, something like this, and then suddenly Mummy comes up the Thames or something. It's real brilliant. I mean, he turns me on to all this stuff, you know.
Is that Gorgo? Is that the sort of the one from the 60s or something?
It wasn't was it Gorgo? This thing was like a brontosaurus or something, I think. But and
kind of like,
you know,
a British Godzilla movie.
Yeah, kind of. But it was like, I think it was a bronto, and then it was like they were trying to get rid of it, and then suddenly Mum comes up the Thames to collect her baby, and they go down the Thames into the sunset or something. I think they don't kill them.
good.
But yeah, Rogers. You know, we're always discussing this stuff. You know. Always. And he came across, funnily enough, he came across a black and white, it would be black and white, I think it was the original, oh God, what was it, the Captain Nemo thing, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah.
1916, I think it was. It was the first time, I think, they'd ever shot footage underwater. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm dying to see it. He says it's amazing, you know, for the time. So all the time we're talking about this stuff.
This is like the birth of cinema, yes.
Yeah.
But, well, hopefully there'll be plenty of food for thought in the books.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That's great.
And stay in touch. As I said, Ray's models will be on display. We might even get over to Dallas one day.
Oh, that'd be amazing. So, I'll be at the front of the queue for that one, I tell you.
Keep in touch.
Oh, yeah,
in the meantime,
definitely.
Nigel, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're very
today.
Welcome. And you know, thank you for asking me to do this. And again, thank you very much for those books. Brilliant. Pride of place in my library, those will take.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Thanks. And let's rock. Look forward to the show tonight. It's going to be rocking.
It's going to be loud and it's going to be hot.
Awesome. Thanks for it.
That's amazing, Connor, and fabulous that someone from what appears to be a very different sort of creative industry, again, a kind of a heavy metal rock musician, is such a great fan of Ray Harryhausen. But when you think about it, you know, the kind of stuff that's in a Harryhausen film would ideally suit a Saxon video. You know, if Saxon had the ultimate budget to do the ultimate rock video, then you can imagine they'd get Ray Harryhausen in. Maybe it would be set on the Isle of Bronze. How fabulous. Well, how very exciting. Were you surprised how well that went?
Yes, no, I was delighted. I mean, first of all, a lovely chap, very, very friendly. And he invited us along, firstly, to go to the band's sound check. So we sat and watched the band rehearsing for their performance that night. And my ears were ringing. That's the first thing I said to him was that, you know, to be honest, I don't know how he does that every night. He's in the drum kit every night, bashing away. But that's his career. That's his profession. But I had seen that his nickname was the Rex or the T-Rex. And so I had to speak to him a little bit about him, about how he'd acquired that nickname. And as you heard in the interview there, he's a enthusiastic dinosaur fan and film fan, as so many musicians are. And the more we speak to people from different creative backgrounds, the more we find out there's a common thread. They tend to be very interested in Ray Harryhausen's movie. And just a factoid, a bit of trivia, on the week that interview was recorded, Nigel Glockler was in the charts for a very different reason. He used to be the drummer for Toya Wilcox. One of her older albums from the 1980s had hit the top 20. I think there was a re-release for an album that he'd played on before he joined Saxon. So again, diversity there as well. A very different kind of musical performer, but great to see. I had a smile on my face when I saw that he was back in the charts, not only with Saxon, but with Toya, with the legendary Toya Wilcox too.
Oh, how fabulous. I wonder if Toya is a fan of Ray Harryhausen. I always imagined that Carol Decker of T'Pau would be. I don't know why. But if there's, thanks very much, Nigel, for appearing on here. If there are any other famous rockers out there, whether it's Nick Kershaw, the Pet Shop Boys, or someone from Saxon, then by all means get in touch and you'll be treated to the Ray Harryhausen podcast treatment, which is rather lovely. How fabulous, Connor. That's brilliant. What's coming up for us on the next podcast and in Harryhausen News? Anything new to report?
Well, there's a very special podcast coming up. I'm sure a lot of film fans will be aware that King Kong turns 90 this year. In fact, it has turned 90 now, as we're midway through the year 2023. So that film from 1933, which is, I suppose, more than just an important film, it's an important piece of human culture, is 90 years old. And we at the Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation have, of course, been at the centre of a number of events celebrating that movie. And so we'll be sharing an interview from a very special exhibition of King Kong and Ray Harryhausen artwork. So that's what's coming up next. And yeah, keep your ears peeled for that, or your eyes peeled on YouTube, because King Kong's an important film, and it's important for us to celebrate the influence that had on Ray.
Excellent. We're all looking forward to King Kong in the next podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find more about us here at RayHarryhausen.com, where you can find our social media links too, and also our backlog of award-nominated podcasts. So keep listening, and we'll see you soon.
Copyright in the Ray Harryhausen podcast is owned by the Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation, a registered Scottish charity, number SC001419, 2013. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part without written permission from the Foundation. The views expressed within these podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of the Foundation, its trustees or employees. For further terms and conditions, please contact us at rayharryhausen.com, where you can also find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter links.